Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is one of our favorite guests, attorney Bob Nersessian. We'll be talking to Bob in a few minutes. On last week's show, Munch and I were speaking about scouting and occasionally relying on somebody else to give us a shout-out when they find something they think we'd be interested in. We received an email sent to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com asking us whether there are professional scouts out there for hire. Richard, what do you know about this?
Well, it seems to me that for blackjack card counters, Stanford Wong is kind of doing that for you. He pays people like you, Bob, used to have that job going casino to casino in different parts of the country, noting
ago,
the
yep.
rules and penetration and number of decks and things like that. So there are scouts for hire. Personally, I really tend to stay away from that just because it would be really impossible for me to find a scout who could look for every possible thing in a casino that I would want them to look for. Occasionally, if I am thinking to go to an area, I will call somebody that lives in that area and say, could you go to this casino and look for exactly this, you know? I would think that somebody who likes being in the casinos all the time and lived in a place like Vegas or Atlantic City, I would think that they might be able to offer some value to, you know, a certain number of people.
Yeah, I would think so. I did get such a email several months ago and went to Pennsylvania, ended up getting stiffed on that. Although a follow-up on that, within the last week, that guy contacted me saying he just got out of rehab and is intending to make amends, and so that I will be able to expect small checks for however long it takes.
That's great.
He's got a long way before I trust him again, but I hope that comes true.
As far as scouting too, you know, there are some types of games where I it's not that I hire people to go scout for me, but people will contact me periodically and say, hey, I found this particular type of game. And in situations like that, then I would try to include them in the play. You know, something like that, as opposed to I'll pay you X number of dollars per hour to go from casino to casino looking for something, you know.
And sometimes ex-partners have found plays or come across plays one way or another and call you to invite you in on them. So
yes. Yeah. And I do the same thing for them as well.
Exactly. Now, I know of a professional scout, but he's not for hire. There is a small team of progressive video poker players who mainly play in Las Vegas. An additional member of their team never plays but scouts full-time for that team. Now, it's only Las Vegas, but that's still a pretty big area. North, south, Aliante, and Prim are maybe 70 miles apart. East, west, the Vegas Valley maybe goes 30 miles. There's probably 100 different casinos in that area, and 300 bars and pubs, some of which have progressives occasionally. So I don't know how often he checks out Laughlin, but that's 90 miles southeast of Las Vegas. Anyway,
wow, why does he never play?
Well, he prefers the scouting job, and he gets however it's compensated. They've been a team for more than a decade, and they trust each other, and so that's the way they do it. So some people are would rather work for a living and get guaranteed wages, so to speak, than take risk.
Oh yeah, no, I understand that, but you know, back 30 years ago, we actually employed somebody to go to every casino in Nevada and look for dealers that were cheating. This was somebody who had experience, and you know, we felt there were quite a few people who were worried about Reno. They were worried that there were a lot of cheating dealers in Reno because their results had not been very good. So yeah, we paid somebody to just go scout everywhere and look, you know, to find cheating dealers and warn us away from them. And they found very, very, very few.
And it was worth your money to pay him to do that?
We paid him money to do that. Yeah.
Huh. All right. So let's talk to Bob Nersessian. Bob has made a career representing players in legal battles against casinos and various governmental agencies. He's a frequent guest of the show. Bob Nersessian, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we have spoken about the crime of structuring before, and we have some more questions about it.
I do too.
Okay, good. Try this one. See if it's something that you can speak authoritatively on, or just this is your wild ass guess or whatever. Just let us know the level of your expertise when you hear it. The crime of structuring occurs when you have more than $10,000 in cash or chips, and you cash in less than $10,000 in order to avoid IRS reporting requirements. That's what structuring is. Now, we had an email from a player who said the reason he cashed in for less than $10,000 wasn't to avoid the IRS reporting requirements, but rather he didn't want to give his ID to the casino. Now, the law says specifically, quote, no person shall, for the purpose of evading the reporting requirements, unquote. Now, is it defensible that he's doing this for another reason?
That's currently in the courts. As to whether or not it's defensible, it's also going to depend on how the courts construct that statute as to whether or not for the purpose of, and you hit the nail right on the head, Bob, when you picked those words, as to where the dispute is falling. Is it a question of fact for a jury? Is it for a judge to decide? Is it satisfied if the person knows that that will be the result, but that is not the purpose? All of these questions are still up in the air. They don't sound like they're questions. I understand that. And indeed, I've been in the thick of one of these myself recently. I think my personal thought, or to make it a wild-ass guess, as you said, is that it's a specific intent crime. That's what for the purpose of is in there for. And if the actual reason is a reason other than avoiding reporting requirements, you should be okay. The other place I've run into it is this ties in with identification, et cetera, as well, because the for the purpose of language does not limit itself to structuring. It also includes any act to evade, any act taken for the purpose of avoiding the federal reporting requirements. And now the federal prosecutors and others are starting to take money from people who have used false identification, as people want to call it, but as it actually is, alias identification, if there's no fraud involved. And that's gotten pretty interesting and pretty heated with some actual arguments back and forth between the government and the attorneys representing the players. It's unresolved as of this point. It's going to be interesting how it plays out, because it really seems from 1,000 different directions that everybody in authority is attempting to make it mandatory that anyone who is gambling shows identification. To take it one step further, and I'm glad you brought this up because I was hoping to talk about this today. Recently, the Nevada Gaming Control Board agents have taken the position that they can demand, the casinos can demand identification to change out amounts of less than $10,000. And this is going to be hard fought, I think. I think that they are dead wrong. Their concept is, well, you have to comply with the casino's reporting requirements and Title 31 policies. And they have a policy of tracking the less than $10,000 cash in so that they can tie it in later when you cash in more and then meet their reporting requirements.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I am really shocked that gaming has stood behind this. There are people who have been forced to show identification at this point. Others who have stood fast, and we're in the middle of arguing, even as we speak, some of the issues as to whether or not this whole argument makes any sense. And as I am wont to sort of lean towards the gambler side, I think it makes no sense. I also think it's ridiculous. I think that the purpose, if we're going to turn on that word, is that same purpose that we consistently see with casinos, and that is that they're trying to build their databases and share data on identification. It has nothing to do with reporting requirements. But more importantly, when you turn to the statutes don't, the reporting requirements of the casino, one, don't require them to do that. Two, even if you're an absolute refuser, that makes you the criminal as a gambler and does not excuse the casino from their contractual obligations, that being to pay out and cash the chips. So none of this makes any sense. I think that strange cabal between gaming, which is supposed to represent the public, and the casinos have now reached a new nadir and are applying this funny little rule that says that even if you cash out $3,000, if it's a casino's policy to require that you show ID, you have to.
Bob, another one of our listeners wanted to know if he could fill out a CTR himself. So say he wins $20,000 worth of chips, but he knows that he's going to cash them out slowly. Can he go home, get a blank CTR, fill it out, submit it, and then at least he would then not be breaking any law in cashing out slowly?
Did you get this from me, Richard?
No. I did get it from a mutual friend of ours, though.
Okay, because self-reporting is a concept or an idea that I recently floated, and I don't know that anybody had done it before. There's no methodology to do that. I would suggest, though, that the federal government would be hard-pressed to prosecute. I'm trying to remember the form number right now. It's not technically a CTR. It's an IRS form or a Treasury form. I think it's 8303 or 8033. I'm not remembering, but there's a federal tax form that would normally be filled out. It's not technically a CTR, although it serves the same purpose, and it's a form that in the ordinary circumstances would be filled out by a person in the position of a casino. But you would have, a player would have the ability to put in all of that information and still file it themselves. And I think if anybody was coming back later to prosecute, the fact that that form was filed would be very strong evidence that there was no intent to cause any reporting requirements to be evaded. And along with this, I've talked to a U.S. attorney, an assistant U.S. attorney on this issue, didn't really get an answer, got a look of curiosity, like, wow, that's interesting. But my point was, in essence, to lobby for the ability to self-report and continue to play anonymously as gamblers. Also pointing out that the entire CTR and financial reporting and money laundering scheme, if you will, has taken up professional gambling and made legal activities difficult with no gain to the government, and somebody should do something to allow this to exactly what you're saying to occur.
Isn't it restraint of trade?
Well, right? So's the requirement that you get a business license. The government can do what they want.
How long ago was this $10,000 limit done? I mean, there's been inflation since then, hasn't there?
Yes. And the other thing is, people don't understand, the general public and the government has no concept of the kind of money that turns in professional gambling in order that the people who are playing can have a sufficient bankroll and utilize the law in large numbers to pretty well assure that they're going to be making a living. So when they see these numbers, red lights go off in anybody's head wearing a badge with the reaction of, you can't even have that much money and have it legal.
All right. Let's.
I just want to mention that there was an article in the paper today that somebody high up in the DOJ or Treasury gave a talk at the G2E just a couple of weeks ago, basically saying that they were going to be cracking down even further on the casinos about their reporting. Apparently, it did not go over well with the casino executives.
It's also just patently ridiculous because I keep seeing innocent people, and I can think of four real human beings off the top of my head who did absolutely nothing other than win money and try and take it home, who have found themselves in a world of hurt over this very issue.
All right. We got lots of other subjects. I got a feeling that when you come back next time, we'll have more things on structuring, but that's the way it goes.
Did I answer your question?
You gave us a lot of things to think about. and it was actually a question from one of our listeners, and we appreciate them sending them in. So you did well. Now, we've spoken several times about the...
B-plus?
A B-plus? Probably better than that.
Oh, okay.
Good. We've spoken several times about the You Can't Lose promotion at the Revel Casino in Atlantic City. Basically, however much a player lost in slots during July of this year, up to $100,000 was refunded totally in terms of free slot play over 20 consecutive weeks starting in August. The 20 weeks are approximately halfway over as of when we're doing the show. Now, there have been a number of complaints about the way the casino administered the promotion, including some players they didn't let play and other things. The management team who designed the promotion has been replaced.
Now there's a shock.
Have they really? I did not know that.
Yeah, okay. They apparently October 1st, a man named Scott Krieger, who I had a not-so-friendly run-in with when he was with Station Casinos here in Las Vegas, is now the new CEO there. Now, are you involved in any of the lawsuits related to this? And if so, can you talk about the subject matter of those lawsuits?
The subject matter of those lawsuits? Yes, I am.
Okay.
And does anybody out there think that this was anything other than just bare theft?
Not me. I mean, I want to bet with Bob, because I the reason I didn't go play this was because of exactly what happened. I mean,
well, and what is the what's the basis of going after, or the basis of the lawsuits is your question? You can't steal from people.
Okay.
Theft may be a little strong. It might be fraud. It might even be negligent misrepresentation in the opinion of the attorneys, but it wasn't right.
So these were, they let players start to play, had them lose, and then said you're not eligible for the rebate? Is that?
That's a goodly part of what we're dealing with, yes.
All right, good. All right.
Sorry to make that long topic so short.
It's okay. We got several other short topics, which you have the ability to make long. So it's okay. It works out. Now, a listener was wondering about playing video poker on somebody else's slot club card and hitting a taxable jackpot.
Yeah, thanks for telegraphing this issue because it told me how little I know about it. But
oh,
when you sent me a little note that we might talk about this today.
Okay,
right.
Good.
Let me just add. So this was a listener question. He, I guess, had previously been 86th, and he sent the question if he was in playing on someone else's card and he hits the jackpot. But now when they come up to pay the jackpot, he gives them his real ID and real Social Security number.
Okay. This is another wild-ass guess. I don't think, especially in light of the Chen case, which many of your listeners are familiar with,
yes,
as to what is fraud and what is not fraud, playing under a different person's player's card might violate some rules, but I don't think it's going to change the fact that the casino has to pay. No guarantee on that opinion. The other thing that you brought up that I found very interesting is, together with the questions you asked, well, what about if ownership has changed and of the casino since the 86ing?
Yes.
And I do have something to say on that, which is a trespass warning is only good if given by an owner or an occupant per the statute. And that's the test. So if the ownership has changed, you do not have a valid trespass anymore under that statute. Now, your listeners and the rest of the world will probably get completely discombobulated by the idea of a change of ownership. For example, when Park Place sold out to Caesars, well, merged and then sold out, there was no change of ownership of Caesars Palace. Caesars Palace, the casino, is owned by Desert Palace, Inc. That moved with the mergers and always stayed the same company. Caesars, as an example, is a holding company, and it appears that their casinos are all owned by corporations that are not Caesars Entertainment, were not Harrah's Entertainment. They're run by a company called Caesars Operating Company. Arguably, Caesars Operating Company could claim they're an occupant. There's no way that they could claim they're an owner. But if you're looking at the Caesars Harrah's group, just because there's a transaction or a merger at the top, that will not likely mean that there's been a change of ownership of the casino. The converse could be seen in the Orleans group, Coast Casinos and Boyd. When they were together, that was one owner.
Michael Gunn.
And he owned all the casinos. There was no holding company in between. So when Boyd came in, that was a change of ownership for the coast casinos.
Yes.
So what about the Palms, where it used to be Maloof, and now it's, I don't know who it is.
And I'm not sure on the Palms. As these issues come up in my office, I have to do the research on each of them. The place where you do the research to find out who the owners are and who has been the owner and who the current owner is on the website for the Nevada Gaming Control Board under publications and then under unrestricted licenses. and they actually have a history of ownership of the casinos with the dates of change. So anybody who's wondering if an old 86 is still good could pull up the casino by name and run down the list and see if it has the same consistent owner all the way back to the date of the 86, or if there has been a different owner interposed in the interim.
I mean, a lot of this is really moot because usually if you've been 86, they just tell you, you've been 86, get out or whatever. I mean, I guess if they went to the trouble of actually having you arrested, well, then you're going to have to go deal with finding all this out. And
welcome to my
them.
World.
Now,
and hiring you, Bob.
On a practical basis, before it gets to the attorneys, casinos have different policies on playing on other people's cards. For example, Harrah's Group, Caesars, basically doesn't mind if you play on somebody else's card.
Not my experience.
Well, maybe.
Or not the experience of all
Bob,
of my clients.
Bob Dancer, I think you're talking about like playing on your wife's card. That's different than playing on an assumed names card or some other guy.
Okay.
You know?
Perhaps.
I am familiar with a circumstance at a Caesars property where a daughter got 86'd for playing on her mother's card.
Okay. Perhaps they've changed the rules. And so I have played on, when I was married to Shirley, Shirley did not have the same last name as me. And I was never questioned about playing on her card. And I would hit a number of jackpots and just have them sign for it. The South Point specifically says a spouse is okay to play on their card. The Palm specifically says it's not. And other casinos, so, and players have been told if you play on somebody else's card and you hit a jackpot the first time, you're going to be warned. And the next time, you're both going to be kicked out of the club. So different casinos have different policies before they get to the casino. Now, I'm a player that if a casino tells me not to do something, that I generally don't do it simply because I'm a well-known player and several casinos are this close from asking me not to play there anymore anyway, so why get in a fight with them? But not everybody has that baggage that they carry around. Let's change subjects again.
Well, as
yeah?
an aside,
go ahead.
I know my wife plays on my card all the time. And how do I know that? Because I never have any points.
Oh, well, she redeems your points.
Yes.
That's not adding to your points. That's redeeming your points.
I understand.
Ah, Thea's a smart lady. All right. Now, the following has never happened to me, but it has happened to others. And it's a hypothetical example. But assume I'm in a casino and discover something juicy that I think is right up Richard's alley. I text him to get over here quickly. Unfortunately, surveillance has been watching me like a hawk and reads my iPhone, including what the text says and including it that it's to somebody named Munchkin. Now, they write down in their wise guy book that Dancer and Munchkins are associates. And if they were suspicious about me, all those suspicions are now attached to Richard. And if they were suspicious about him before, they now put those suspicions on me. Is a casino doing anything illegal or improper by eavesdropping on our texting and then acting on information gathered by that eavesdropping?
I can't find anything illegal that they're doing. I think it's very unneighborly and ungentlemanly.
You sound like the British in World War II.
Well,
gentlemen don't read each other's.
You know, it is one of the most base things I have ever seen. And
well, oh, you can think of a lot basic
no,
than that.
No, I'm really, really insulted by this. And you just got me on my horse, and you can hear it in my voice. I can't believe that these people think that that technology that has been essentially mandated for the safety of the patrons and to prevent cheating by getting cards and stuff like that can be used so willy-nilly for the invasion of privacy. Just a little side note. I've got a case right now. It looks like it's going to go to a jury trial. One of the things that I have on my side is the fact that they have at least 4 photo and video montages of texts that were going on between a number of people that I've gotten in discovery. And my plan is, and any casino out there should listen to that, I'm going to blow those up, I'm going to hold them in front of the jury, and I'm going to turn that casino into the slimiest, lowly slug on the face of the earth and get that jury so ticked off that they are going to freak out on that casino, and they're going to rue the day that they ever took down somebody's text message.
That's a pretty clear-cut answer.
Yeah, you go. So, right. In a similar vein, if the casino gets your license plate either through their cameras in the garage or whatever, and then gets information about you from DMV. Are there any, and then 86 is you because they find out who you are because of what they found out from DMV.
How'd they get this from DMV?
Well, that's the question. I mean, this goes on. Casinos are getting information from DMV. So that is the question. Is there a law being broken when the casinos get information from DMV?
I believe so. I don't know that the casino is necessarily breaking the law, but there is somebody with DMV that should be losing their job.
You got to find out who it was.
That's the problem. Now, a practice that had gone on for years was that casinos could just call up Metro or other. Well, no, I'll give this practice. Casinos would get information from Metro, from a scope, to add into the private investigator databases that were out there on individuals. And there was an informal arrangement whereby there was information sharing between casinos and police agencies. For the most part, I believe that's been stopped now, but I was never able to pin down a single individual at Metro who was releasing the information. Now, to the credit of what's happened since we've taken on stuff like this, I was talking to a prosecuting attorney last week, and I described a situation where a casino had held an individual for the local police to come over and get his identification, even though the casino had no right to compel the identification, and then turn it over to the casino. And as those circumstances were explained, this district attorney, or this prosecuting attorney, got it, was angered by it, and from what I am guessing from the way the conversation went and the information has been exchanged, has put people on the carpet over it. So hopefully some of this, I'll refer to it a cabal again, is starting to go back to the rule of law and departing from their government casino gangster ways.
Well, that's great. I mean, if it's changing there in Nevada, but I mean, it's 10 times worse when you get outside Nevada.
Well, are you familiar with the Grosch case? Or I know many of the listeners are, but there was a cop who went down for tens of thousands of dollars in Mississippi for taking an identification off of somebody that the casino was holding and handing it over to the casino. It's not even a close question. If the casino is holding you to only get your identification and a police officer shows up and assists, that's false imprisonment while the casino's holding you, and it turns into, or the police officer is aiding and abetting, and it turns into a civil rights violation at that point. It's just a little hard to get the message out. Tribal police are a little different, except that oftentimes they will call over the local state constabulary to pull down the identification. And now you have state action against a state actor and a lawsuit waiting there against that cop who showed up. And at that point, you will still chill it, because once the local people find out or realize and recognize, holy crud, I am liable personally for this, they'll stop doing it and stop assisting Indian casinos in that kind of activity.
Interesting.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, I good. Let's.
Well, I've seen it happen in two instances: one in California, one in Arizona, where policies have changed. But I know that there's also what
9,800 other police departments out there.
Right.
No, you know, I have to say, Bob, I one time was pulled over outside an Indian casino in California, and they asked my passenger for his ID, and. My passenger said, "I'm not driving. I don't need ID," and they let it go. So, yeah.
And Richard, that see, the police, and it's been sanctioned by the courts also, have taken a perspective of, we can ask pretty much anything we want, and if people just comply with it, oh well. So yeah. You get questions like that all the time. I hate to turn myself into a conspiracy nut or what have you, but you can watch probably 5,000 different videos on YouTube where people say no to police, and the police say, "Well, thank you, have a good day," and go away.
Yes, I've stopped for a traffic thing, and once the officer asked me where was I going, and I said I named a city, and they didn't press it. So let's talk about traffic. There have been cases where during a traffic stop, the police will have a police dog with them. When the officer and the dog are coming up to the car, the dog barks. Maybe it was because the dog actually detected something illegal. Maybe it was because the police did something to cause the dog to bark. We don't know. Hard to tell. You can't interview the dog to find out for sure. And even if you could, maybe the dog wouldn't tell the truth. I don't know. The police declare that the dog barking is probable cause to search the car. They do search the car. They find money and confiscate it. What should the player do at this point?
At that point, hire a lawyer.
At that point, it's too late. Yeah. I mean, is there anything he can do ahead of time?
Ahead of time?
Or after they said it's probable cause, we're going to just search the car.
Well, I'm going to go back to an ahead of time that I have talked about a lot, but professional gamblers are not seeming to pick up on it, possibly for reasons related to taxes or other things. But it seems to me, as soon as you have that kind of cash on you, convert it to a traveler's check, a bank check, whatever. Now, at that point, there will be a CTR because you're doing a cash transaction. But that's the same as the self-reporting we just talked about. You're not.
Well, but Bob, that doesn't work if you're going to go, you know, if you're in Missouri and you're going to drive from one casino to the other, you know, you need the cash. You need to, you know, your cash is your toolbox, and you can't convert it. You need it.
If you're in Mississippi and you're going to be driving through Arizona, which is infamous for their seizures and looking and targeting out-of-state players or out-of-state cars and things like that, and you're traveling back to Nevada, why would you have six figures in your trunk? Okay? The answer is because that's my money, and I earned it, and I have every right to have it in my trunk. But if you have a traveler's check in your wallet, they aren't going to have that 600 grand. I agree, you got to have your bank with you, and you've got to have it there to access. But there is there any, I know that there are a couple of plays where you need six figures in your pocket. But other than those, carry what you have to in green and keep the rest of it in something that is not cash.
Well, that works when you're coming.
Yeah, I mean, but the police have been confiscating a lot less than six figures.
I understand. So on the way home, don't carry the 20.
But
okay.
On the way home, though, is different than on the way there.
I understand that. I do. So what I'm saying is, and curiously, as you say that, the four circumstances where this has come up in my office, the same kind of situation you're talking about, have all occurred on the way home. I have no idea why. Maybe there's some casino reporting or things of that going on, but all four instances dealt with on the way home. If you're getting rid of half of the issue, get rid of it. Now, another problem that is, or another issue in this respect, and I just lost my train of thought, but
I want to talk about what you should say to the policeman when they pull you over. They always have some BS reason they pulled you over. You know, you didn't signal changing lanes or something like that.
I understand.
Right? And then they ask you, you don't mind if we search your car, do you?
Well, the only there are dash cams that you can put on your car that will show that you hadn't been doing anything wrong. For example, one of the common things they will say for this trumped up stop is you were failing to maintain your lane. If you have a video with the audio of that cop coming up to the car and saying you were failing to maintain your lane, and you have the last 25 minutes of a digital recording that shows that you never once left your lane, that cop's going to have a hard time. And these things are not necessarily expensive. They're ubiquitous in Russia, where there's a huge insurance scamming underground going on, where people jump in front of cars. So everybody's now put these digital video cameras on their dashboard. It sounds like a way overblown thing to do. It's a shame that I even have to raise this kind of issue in America as a way to protect yourself.
I think that's a great idea, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
can you get it at Sharper Image? Where do you get these things?
I think they got them at Radio Shack. I think they're like $150, and they'll record 2 hours digital and then roll over on themselves.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, that sounds like a great idea.
Including sound. And they're not illegal, and they're not...
No, they're not illegal.
And you don't have to inform the officer that he's being taped while he's talking.
He's not being taped.
Well, his voice is.
Well, okay. See, that depends on the state.
Uh-huh. Well, we can drive around. Which state should we drive around?
On the seizure stuff, the remedy that has to be used, or the only remedy that is out there, is a disgustingly, it's another just shame that it has to be this way. But the only answer is to write your congressman, because the courts and the legislatures have given the police so much authority in this seizure law that it's open season on anybody carrying cash.
Well, our Congress is too busy doing nothing for us. I don't know if they'll have time for us. So, all right, Bob, thank you. It's always fun and educational when you're on this show.
Are we done? You got 15 more minutes.
All right.
I can pontificate all day.
We'll come back after the commercials.
Good. We have to pay some bills, and we have some things that if we have time to talk about, we can. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else. In October, you play for buffets. Earn 300 points prior to 1 p.m. Monday through Thursday and earn a free lunch buffet. Play a total of 600 points prior to 8 and earn a free dinner buffet, whether you've gotten that free lunch buffet that same day or not. They usually have double points on holidays at the South Point, but according to the head of Slot Club, when I spoke to her today, it's official they will not be having double points on Halloween. The free video poker class this coming week is 9-6 jacks or better multi-strike. Multi-Strike is a four-line game where you pay in advance for all four lines, but only get to play the second line if you win on the first line, and then only get to play the third line if you win on the first two, and you play on the fourth line if you win the first three, where winning means at least get your money back. To compensate for the fact that you only get up to each of the higher lines about 50% of the time, you get your winnings on the second line multiplied by 2, your winnings on the third line multiplied by 4, and winning on the top line multiplied by 8. The strategy is different for all four lines because just getting to the next lineup has value. And so therefore you tend to take bird in the hand more frequently at the lower levels, and you tend to gamble up more at the higher levels. The game returns 99.79%, so that gives you an edge 24/7, since the casino has a 0.30 slot club. At the Palms, this weekend is the third week of their $100,000 monster truck drawings. 10 winners each Friday and Saturday night will receive between $250 and $1,500, and each will receive an entry into the truck drawing, which will be held October 26th, immediately after the regular Saturday night drawing. If you win the truck, you get $30,000 in credit at Finley Chevrolet or $24,000 in cash or free slot play. I actually would have personally appreciated if none of you came out for the drawing, because I have a bunch of entries in both this week and next week, and I would think a truck would be nice. For the PEW Play, Earn, and Win drawings, Monday, Wednesday, Friday for the second half of the month, they have a theme of genuine articles. Top prizes are a Samsonite wheeled business case, a floor heater, 3 different bags by Vera Bradley. As always, you keep the points. Unredeemed points earned Monday may be spent on Wednesdays or Friday. Unredeemed points earned Wednesday may be spent on Friday. Tuesdays and Thursdays, you may earn Albertsons or Costco gift cards at a rate of 40,000 points per $100 worth of gift cards, or 20.25%. Unlike the PEW gifts, unredeemed points from Tuesday do not carry over to from Thursday. Assuming you view the gift cards as the same as cash, this means double points 2 days a week, up to $82,000 coined in for each of those days. At videopoker.com, the daily contest today is 100 play quick quads. Tomorrow the contest will be Extra Draw Frenzy, Saturday it'll be Big Times Draw Poker, and Sunday it'll be 25 play Super Times Pay. These are good ways to get familiar with these games so you have some idea of what they're like. There'll be a monthly contest beginning Thursday the 24th, a week from today, with a top prize of $500. Which game will be used during that contest has not yet been announced. VideoPoker.com is giving away a free month's gold membership to everyone who attends one or more of my free video poker classes at the South Point. The gold membership allows you to avoid the pop-up commercials on the site and gives you correction on many games, such as quick quads, where that correction isn't available on any other easily available software. Our guest next week is a man named Rich Muni. He's Vice President of Player Development for the Poker Player Alliance. PPA is an organization by and for poker players that provides information and lobbies on behalf of these players. Among other things, we'll be talking about the upcoming deadline for applying to get your money back on Full Tilt Poker. All right, Bob, you're back on. So you got a few minutes left. Richard and I have things to talk about. If you don't, did you want to pontificate on anything in particular, or did you want us to give you a question?
Well, I'll turn it back to Richard and you in a moment. But one thing, wow, it's the Bob Show. one thing, you guys had faxed over a circumstance that another reader had, or another listener had written in about.
Okay.
And it dealt with a craps play. And it wasn't an advantage play or anything. He was just playing craps. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't talk about that case in particular because it is still ongoing. But I will point out, and I think it's important to note this, a gaming control agent actually wrote a decision that said that a don't come bet that had already been established with the point established was of no different value than an original bet.
Right. So clearly the guy was an idiot.
But how can they beat these are gaming control
agents.
So
they know what happened. A guy was playing craps. He made a don't come bet. It went to the four. So now he's a 2-to-1 favorite to win the bet. And a boss comes up and said, you've been 86'd. You're out of here. Give him his bet back. So he already had that bet. It's really sort of like the stolen ace case that you had where they took away the player's ace.
But their gaming in New Jersey acknowledged that that was inappropriate.
Yeah, right. So gaming in Nevada was.
Yeah, well, I think one of the interesting things about this case is this was for a small amount of money, something like the guy was out $100, and he spent hours researching it. He hired Bob. He flew to Vegas back to do it.
He wrote letters to the gaming commission.
It must have cost him, I don't know, 10 or 20 or whatever it was, thousand, on a matter of principle, to get his $100 back because he felt cheated. Some of these.
And we still don't have it back.
And you still don't have the $95 back or whatever it was that he was going to get. And so a lot of times you got to make a tough choice of if you want to pay to get the right thing. To get justice, it can cost you a lot more than what you're losing by not having justice.
You know what? And I just want to say one thing about that. The biggest excuse I hear from players for not doing it is, oh, if I sue the casino or if I do this, it's going to put even more heat on me. I'll become more recognized. I'll become better known. And I'll have an even harder time playing. And I just want to say, you know, if guys like James Grosjean and Tommy Hyland can bring these cases and they still go out and play all the time, you know, so the idea that you're going to get burned out and not be able to play if you file lawsuits or complain to gaming is just complete hogwash.
Well, it's not complete hogwash. And we have about 1 minute to go. The there can be, you're going to be 86 from this particular casino or a group of related casinos if you take them to court. They would have every reason to be annoyed at you.
Well, in most of these cases, they've already barred you or 86'd you, though.
Sometimes.
Generally, and I'm sorry I used up all of your time. I thought that you had 6 more minutes.
No, but we still have 45 seconds.
So to finish with what I was saying.
All right.
The concept for me here is gaming agents as investigators of the original complaint. These gentlemen and ladies are not allowed to gamble. That's part of their job. They cannot be in a Nevada licensed casino and wagering. And that breeds ignorance. I actually would like to let them gamble a little bit. I understand the conflicts that rise up, but I've seen 3 or 4 times now gaming agents, when you're trying to explain a game, looking at you with blank stares, or going back to the Grosjean case, they had 10
Bob Nersessian,
being
thank you very much. Good night, everybody.
Poker.
Go out and hit lots of royal flushes.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.